Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by political analyst for the Publix Radio, Scott McKay. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning to you.
Good morning, all.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our guest politics economics reporter for WPRI-TV, Channel 12, Ted Nesi. Thank you for joining us.
Happy Election Eve, Ian.
Indeed. Let's start with a new sexual harassment controversy involving state lawmakers. Ted, you reported this week that alleged harassment by Burrillville Representative Cale Keeble was widely known by other lawmakers for years. There have been rumors for a long time about this, and we should note that Keeble denies any harassment. It seems to me like there are two separate things going on here. One is the real depth of harassment involving state lawmakers. The other is the high-profile race involving Speaker Mattiello and whether he'll be able to withstand a challenge by Republican Steve Fries in Cranston. Ted, what do you make of the timing of how this story was leaked to you?
Well, obviously, I can't speak specifically about how I obtained the email, but I will say, you know, once I had that email, I made a lot of phone calls, and my story Wednesday on WPRI.com has 12 reps, you know, most of them on the record describing behavior, describing problems. I think the election timing, I'm sure, played into it partly, but I think also the Blasey Ford hearings might have played into it. I've been hearing from people who know Kazarian. They think that perhaps after keeping this under wraps all these years, that watching that, I think, affected a lot of people, how that played out, the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, and that might have also played into why this suddenly emerged.
Maureen, what's your sense of why this story came out just a week before Election Day?
Well, I think it was political. I mean, I think there was a basis to it, as your story pointed out. The interesting thing that I'm curious about, and we won't know until after Election Day, how this plays. This is a very conservative district. This is a district that went for Trump. And there's inklings of pushback about sexual harassment. We're starting to hear that. And so given the constituency, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Mattiello? I mean, I want to be there. I'd like to be at the polls. So it's an unknown. And it's actually conceivable, I don't know, that this might not hurt him as much as people think it would.
Scott, do you think we are going to find out a lot more about other allegations of sexual harassment involving the State House moving forward?
You know, you don't know. We are in the Me Too era. So obviously, if there's more of this stuff going on, I think we perhaps will hear about it. Let's face it, this isn't the first time we have an older guy at the State House making a fool of himself with a younger woman, number one. And number two, you know, stuff that was kept under wraps, we're in a new era now. And people, as Ted mentioned, are much more, women in particular, are much more honest. They're much more forthright. They come out. And that's it, you know, unlike the old days when people just swept this kind of stuff under the rug.
Let's move on to discuss the race for governor. I think it's clear that Democrat Gina Raimondo had a lot of advantages coming into campaign season, the power of incumbency. She's a prodigious fundraiser. The economy's good. At the same time, we see how her closest rival, Cranston Republican Alan Fung, has not seemingly been able to top 37% in polls. Scott, why is it that Mayor Fung has not been able to build more support?
Well, he hasn't run a great campaign. He's been outspent, what, almost 3-1? You know, just little things. He just didn't step up at the right time. We talked earlier, I think, during the campaign about the fact that he refused to really go very public during the primary campaign. Also, and let's not forget this, both of the polls that WPRI and the Publix Radio showed, the questions were asked slightly differently, but they showed pretty strongly that Joe Trillo is really hurting Alan Fung, and that all of those Trillo voters, their second choice is Fung. But as long as Trillo's in there, if he gets more than really 6%, it's very difficult for Alan Fung to win.
Ted, in the past, Mayor Fung has been very accessible to reporters like you and me and others, but this time around during the primary campaign, he was really close to invisible, and he did virtually no events. Was that a strategic mistake in your view?
I think we'll find out next week, but I do increasingly wonder if it was, Ian. I mean, I remember when he was on with you folks here on the Publix Radio, I think he called it disciplined. And of course, campaigns do need to be disciplined. You don't want to be spouting off about everything, but I think there comes a point where disciplined is shading into just being, as you said, Ian, invisible. And I think I was watching, you know, I watch our nightly newscasts and kind of who had events today, who has a presence. And the governor has had an event almost every day, probably for most of this year, whether an official one, a campaign one. And generally, the governor would always be willing to take reporters' questions after on the news of the day and if there was a controversy and this and that. Whereas Mayor Fung really didn't have events until mid-September and generally didn't want to take reporter questions. So I do think that left him out of the discussion a lot. And then he was up against someone with a lot more money where he needed that free media.
Yeah, you know, he was hiding, and that was one thing. And I think one of the problems was he didn't want to, he was vaccinating on the Trump, I mean, on the Trump factor. In other words, he didn't want to get into that whole debate until, of course, he wore that hat. And then he was sort of stuck with that. But my take is he was not a good candidate, just generally speaking. And the other thing is, you know, he can't get over 35-36%. And I'm not sure how much more, you know, a cogent campaign would have helped that. The second thing about Trillo is, sure, he's taking votes from Fung. But Trillo is an anti-establishment candidate. Remember Bob Healey. He didn't have an agenda. There's a load of people with free-floating resentment, and they're going to, you know, hone in on Trillo. And it's not about Fung. It's about people being resentful across the board.
That's what you say, but the polling doesn't show that. The polling shows that when those Trillo voters are asked either an approval question or who their second choice is, overwhelmingly, it's Fung.
I think a significant majority of them are.
We also want to touch on some big events in the national news. We were all disturbed by the synagogue attack in Pittsburgh last weekend, as well as how pipe bombs were sent to a number of political officials. Maureen, are these kind of, do these strike you as outliers, extreme events, or are they harbingers of more instability in America in a time of great political polarization?
I think they indicate what's going on in terms of polarization. But I have this maybe strange view. I think the combination of this could be a tipping point in conjunction with if the Republicans lose the House. I think it's going to stiffen the spines of some of the weaker Republicans to step out, confront Donald Trump. And I think you're going to see a more conciliatory atmosphere given the next election.
Scott, what do you say about Maureen's point?
I hope she's right, but I'm not optimistic. As long as the NRA seems to own our gun laws and our Congress, what are we going to do? Are you going to turn every church and synagogue into an airport? I mean, this is really has wide implications for our society. And do we want a military state? How do we stop this stuff? It's really difficult.
Ted, what's your read on what these disturbing events mean for us here in Rhode Island?
Well, you know, my heart breaks first for the people in Pittsburgh, and I live in Providence, and I was actually over on the east side the day after, and I went by the Jewish Community Center, and there were three cop cars outside, which I don't think I'd ever seen before, and I just thought, kind of like Scotty's saying, I just, you know, how sad, you know, that's a place where kids are always going for after-school activities, and people go there for the gym, and they have events and cultural things, and that you need a police presence there. I have no brilliant thought. It's just profoundly sad.
It is terribly sad. We're almost out of time, but Scott, give us a brief comment on the U.S. Senate race between Sheldon Whitehouse and Republican challenger Robert Flanders. Why is Flanders seemingly not being able to muster more support?
Well, we always talk, you know, in politics about timing. I think, first of all, he didn't raise enough money. People around him thought they'd have $2 million. They only got about $1 million. Secondly, if you're in a blue state like Rhode Island with an R next to your name, this is not a good year to be a Republican running for national office.
All right. That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
Maureen.
Thank you.
From WPRI TV Channel 12 and WPRI.com, the ubiquitous Ted Nesi.
Thank you, Ian.
And I'm Ian Donis. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage.